Well, thanks for coming along to listen to us instead of John Dixon, who's one of our mates. And we're very pleased. We can say you're all here. But we have to say we feel kind of, I feel like a bit of an idiot, really, standing here today. I mean, who would put their hand up to get in front of a bunch of blokes and talk about men and women and how they relate to each other? I mean, isn't that just a kind of stupid hospital pass of a speaking spot to get? I mean, it also makes it sound like Amelia and I have kind of got it all worked out, that we're sort of these experts on men and women relating, and somehow we're going to come here and we'll be this example of how it all works, and we'll just kind of communicate that to you somehow. Well, I've got to tell you, our family may look like that, white shirts, beautiful smiles, three lovely kids, but it's actually a lot more like that. It's a lot more like that most of the time. This is what I'm going to get for Father's Day, this book, How to Mow the Lawn, How to Be a Real Man. I'm still learning. Amelia's still learning. In fact, you know, we've had three really good Barneys in the last week that we could tell you about, but we won't in detail. And I think we're on a journey together to try to come to some sort of understanding of how men and women relate and how we can improve our own relationships, whether you're married, single, divorced, separated, want to be married and aren't, are married and wish you weren't. Whatever situation you're in, hopefully what we say today will have some appeal to you, some use to you. I guess what most of what we're saying comes out of an understanding of marriage in the Bible, but I really hope that those who are here who are not married will be able to interpret what we're saying, get a lot from what we're saying as well. I think Amelia and I may also be a little bit weird. I'm actually a useless navigator. Even turning the map around, I can't work it out. I'm lost all the time. She's great. So I don't know what's going on there with the male-female brains, but we seem to be a bit different to others. I can cook. Can others? Who here could actually go home tonight and cook a reasonable meal? Want to get a feel? Hey, a bunch of snags. I can relax. This is good. Excellent. Old blokes can't, that's right. The over 50s are got no chance. So I don't know if we're typical. And we also really resist the idea that you stand up here as a Christian couple and you look like a model marriage. Because I don't think there are any model marriages like that. The only model marriage we get is Jesus and his people, Christ and the church. That's the model understanding of marriage. So please don't look at us and think that's how you're meant to do it. I think it'll become pretty obvious as we talk that, you know, whew, that's not how you're meant to do it. But at least we're here exploring the issue, trying to help you as blokes understand men and women, their differences and the way they relate. So in the first, what have I got? 15, 20 minutes. I'm going to take us through looking a bit at the Bible, what the Bible says about men and women. So get your Bibles out if you've got them here. There will be Bible references on the screen, so you won't need to flick around all that much. Some of you will know that we have done a fair bit of thinking on this topic, and we've written a book called One Flesh, which is really about, it sprang out of the need for people to have something to look at when they were getting married, that would explore the new relationship that was beginning, especially the area of sex, which was Amelia's area of training. And that, I guess, has now become a book that many people read as they're trying to think about their own marriages, and particularly the sexual side of marriage. I know some of you have read it. Your wives have told us that they've given it to you to ask you to read it. So we have done some thinking on the topic. And what we offer you really is our thoughts on how male and female relationships have been shaped through the Bible, through social research, which we consider to be very important, scientific research as it helps us to understand the brain, understand the male and female bodies, understand social behaviour, the way people live together. And also our own experiences and the experiences people have shared with us about what it's like to relate to the other sex. So that's where we're coming from. Are there light years between the sexes? Well, some scientists pointed out to me very unkindly that actually the answer is no. There's only about 1/100,000th of a light year between Mars and Venus. So no, there's no light years between the sexes, but thank you very much for ruining a perfectly good title. But is there this distance between men and women? And to begin to think about that, we need to look at the context that the Bible gives us for seeing where men and women fit together. So let's start at the beginning, or nearly the beginning, in Genesis 2. In the account of the creation, at the end of the creation, man is left in the garden. And God observes man, but sees there's something missing. There's something missing. And he says, it's not good that the man should be alone. That may resonate with some of you already as a thought. It's not good that the man should be alone. And so God sets out to make what he describes as a helper fit for him. And I'll just read a little bit of the story of the account of the creation of woman. So the Lord God caused a deep sleep to fall upon the man. While he slept, he took one of his ribs and closed up its place with flesh. And the rib that the Lord had taken from the man, he made into a woman and brought her to the man. Then the man said, "This is at last bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of man." So the man, from being alone, is given this great gift that thrills him because the gift is like him, a woman like him, to be his companion. And it says then, this is the reason for marriage. A man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. And the man and his wife were both naked and were not ashamed. It's a wonderful picture of what male-female relationships should be. The one flesh relationship. Companions at each other's side. One from the side of the other. And feeling no shame, even though they're completely naked, exposed, completely together. In God's good creation, men and women are made for each other. It's not a cliche, they're actually made for each other. The man was lonely and needed a helper. The woman came along and was cherished by the man as his own flesh and blood. Well, what a wonderful picture that would be if that was the way male-female relationships were in the world. But in the very next chapter of Genesis, we see the collapse of God's good creation. And as Adam and Eve fall into sin, so their own relationships, their own ability to relate to each other, collapses, degrades. And a number of curses come upon them that are described in this way. I've just given you a little extract here from Genesis 3. To the woman, God says, "I'll surely multiply your pain in childbearing. In pain you shall bring forth children. Your desire shall be for your husband, and he shall rule over you." Your desire shall be for your husband, and he shall rule over you. Whatever that phrase means, there's a tension that's come up in the relationship. Desires that are in conflict. The man wants one thing, the woman wants another. There's a struggle for power, a struggle that has come up within their relationship. And to Adam, God said, "Because you have listened to the voice of your wife and have eaten of the tree of which I commanded you, you shall not eat of it. Cursed is the ground because of you. In pain you shall eat of it all the days of your life." This is not saying you should never listen to what your wife says, saying because of the sin that Adam was complicit in with his wife, because of the way he bought into the sin with her, the curse of God comes upon them. And life is a struggle. In pain you shall eat all the days of your life. There's a tragic picture of the effects of the fall on male-female relationships. There's pain. There's this conflict about ruling, about power. There's manipulation. But friends, I take it most of you here today will know the wonderful message of the gospel of Jesus Christ, which liberates us from sin, which puts us right with God and gives us the chance to be right with each other. That gospel intervenes in the world, the fallen world, and starts to undo the curse on Adam and Eve, that shattered the world, shattered their own relationship, and start to put back together the way God would have the world be. It doesn't do it entirely, by any means, and we live with the consequences of being sinners. But our hope is in the gospel of Jesus and the way it restores our relationship with God and enables us to be restored with our friends, our family, our wives and husbands. In the New Testament, we try to return to God's way of relating. And interestingly enough, there isn't an enormous amount in the New Testament about how men and women are meant to relate. But let me give you some of the themes, some of the threads. And I'd encourage you to go away yourself and explore your New Testaments for the teaching that is there about men and women in their relationships. We learn that there's a whole sort of set of structures of relationships in the New Testament. There are older men, older women, younger women, fathers and sons, fathers and daughters, mothers and sons, mothers and daughters. And these all have a particular structure to them in the Bible. And yet they're not explored in great detail. We can't tie down what it's meant to look like to be a mother and daughter that much from Scripture. We just get our threads and themes of wisdom to run with. I've just given you a short quote here from Titus 5, chapter 2, about the way Titus is encouraged to treat women. He said, treat older women as mothers, younger women as sisters. And here's the clarifying point, with absolute purity. That's the goal in the New Testament picture, is to treat each other purely. Not to manipulate, not to wield power over the other, not to be pursuing your own ends, but to be pursuing relationships with purity. But what about marriage in the New Testament? Does it change? Is there still hope for marriage? Or did the fall destroy any chance of having a good marriage? Well, there's some very interesting lessons in 1 Corinthians 7. And as I said, we won't go through all of the details of these, but I encourage you to go home and read that chapter, 1 Corinthians 7. I've just summarised some of the lessons that we get there as Paul explores the place of marriage in the Christian life. Here are my points. As you go back and look at it yourself, you can perhaps see where I've got them from in the passage. I really don't have time to explore all that today, but I've drawn this from the passage itself. Firstly, marriage is still good. It's still a good thing. The passage says, the man who marries does well. It's a good thing to be married. Secondly, it says it's going to be a struggle. Male-female relationships are going to be a struggle still. We haven't escaped the consequences of the fall. There's a division of loyalties for a Christian between God and family and partner. I'm sure this will ring some bells with you, this division of loyalties. Who am I serving? Who am I caring for most? Who am I loving? Marriage is also a liberty in the New Testament, not an obligation. You don't have to get married. You're free to marry, but you don't have to. And the bizarre teaching of 1 Corinthians 7 is, marriage is actually not the best thing. In Paul's view, speaking the word of God to us, there's a better thing than being married. That is, serving God wholeheartedly with all of your life. If you get married, it's a good thing. But there's a better thing, serving God wholeheartedly with your whole life. And he puts that out as a challenge to people, not as something held over them to oppress them and stop them from getting married, not at all. But as a challenge for them to see just how important Jesus Christ and the growth of his kingdom in the world really is. I don't know if that's a startling thought to some, but there's a better thing than being married. It can be a useful thought if you're someone who's longed to be married and not become married, or someone who's struggled with marriage, to know that marriage really is part of this life. That's the other teaching of the passage. It's a thing for this life. But Christian faith, Jesus Christ as Lord of the universe, is for this life and eternity. There's a better thing than being married. Two other quotes I think that are very significant as we come to think about what it means as men to try and relate to women come from the book of Ephesians in chapter 5. Now, sometimes we get distracted as men in this passage, I think. Early on in the passage, it says, wives, submit to your husbands. And we go, okay, that's what we like to hear. Submit to us. But that command is not to us, friends. That's to wives. The commands to husbands are these. Husbands, lay down your life for your wife. Jesus laid down his life for the church. Husbands, lay down your life for your wife. I can't think of a more extreme command in the New Testament to us as men. And if we're doing anything today, trying to think through how we relate to our wives, to other women in our lives, To understand this command is crucial. Lay down your life for your wife. You are not the center of your marriage. You're the servant in your marriage. You lay down your life. Well, that might be kind of a bit heavy and the brow sweating. How can I do that? But the next verse does help us, because the other command is to love your wife as if she were you, as if she were your own body. And this, for me, is this great moment of clarity about what marriage is all about. Because in laying down your life for your wife, you're actually doing something that's in your own best interests. You're loving your wife in the way that you want to be loved. And when this is working properly, then marriage is a happy and joyous thing. Because the sacrifice of the man for his woman comes back in terms of love. Comes back in love in the relationship between you. So you're to love your wife as you love yourself. Well, how are we going on this? How are we going on this project of loving women in this way, of loving wives? I've got some statistics for you. I know some blokes love statistics, so I thought I'd just whack a few in. This is where I turn a bit to the social research and think, well, what's it like out there in society? How are men treating women? How are women finding male behaviour? What's it like? And I haven't just looked at the Christian church. These are figures in general. But my suspicion is figures like these are replicated within the church, to our shame. Because we are not doing a great job of it. We're not doing a great job of laying down our lives for our wives and even of treating women with the love and respect that the Bible commands. 38% of women are sexually molested by the age of 18. A third of the women you know have been sexually molested by the age of 18. There's something really wrong. 70% of the very poor around the world are women. Now just think about this for a moment. It should be less than 50% of women who are among the very, very poor, if men were doing anything like their job. They're the ones who are meant to be laying down their lives. So why are 70% of the poor in the world, those who live on less than a dollar a day, women?
Because all the men have laid down their lives. That's why
they've all died. There you go. That's good. I like it. Third statistic. 50% of marriages end in divorce. It's a pretty straight kind of statistic there. Half the marriages end in divorce. I don't know how that plays out in this room. I don't know how that relates to your own situation. But there's the stats. That's in the world at large. My understanding is the church isn't that different. A little bit different, but not that different. And of the 50% that don't divorce, about half of them claim to be living in stale, unfulfilling, unproductive marriages. Pale reflections of the joy that Adam showed when he saw his spare rib. You know, joy of my joy, flesh of my flesh. So it's a kind of grim picture, and I'm sorry if that's depressing. The question is, can we really make any progress on it? Can men and women understand each other? Can men play their roles in marriage, in life, better? Can we make a difference? Well, can we get inside each other's head? Heads is the topic of the seminar, really. Amelia's going to come up shortly and talk about things from a female point of view. But it may shock you to hear that our answer to this question really is no. Men can't get inside women's heads, and women can't get inside men's heads. No, but it's worth trying. Is that too depressing to hear? What we mean by that will become clear as we talk more. But really, the struggle to understand the other sex is a struggle. There's a kind of version of the Mars and Venus joke that says, men are from Earth, women are from Earth, get over yourselves. But actually, that doesn't ring true, does it? It doesn't cut to the differences. The differences between men and women are quite profound. God has made a world where there are two sexes. But the journey to try and understand each other is the journey of spiritual growth, of personal growth, of one fleshness. So you may not get there. You may not get to the point where you each feel you can entirely understand each other, but you will make progress. And so our message today is one of progress, not trying to be perfect and reach the goal of being the totally perfect husband, totally perfect son, totally perfect boyfriend. It's progress we're on about. You can't achieve these things overnight. Can a woman get inside a man's head? Amelia and I struggle with these kind of questions day by day. Can a woman get inside a man's head? No, we don't think so. Amelia's great because she's been trying to do this for years now in her work, in seeking to understand how men operate, what they want in relationships, what their view of sex is, all these sorts of things. But she'd admit it's still a struggle. And she really doesn't think she knows what's going on in there. She's got some insights and a lot of progress has been made in understanding where blokes are coming from. But we're different. We're different. Can a man get inside a woman's head? Well, Amelia's here to help us try. She's going to come up now and give us some insights into the female point of view, and then I'll come back at the end briefly.
I think I'll leave that up there. I'm going to take this off and walk around. I actually don't have many overheads. I think I've got three. Just show me how to do it and I'll do it.
The arrow.
Yep, good. No, you can go. as long as I find my notes. It's a little intimidating to think that I may be standing up here representing all women. And actually, that's my first point. I can't. And I don't. And I think that's really very important. So I may be able to share some wisdoms, but they're actually going to be fairly general and not a take-home list. And while I was sitting over there, I actually didn't think I'd have an overhead, but now that I do, I'm just going to add something. Because actually Greg's the clever one in our marriage. Okay, I'm much more simple. So I'm going to be sticking to this particular principle, which I'm sure you're all very familiar with, which is keep it simple, stupid. Okay. Not that I think you're stupid. I actually like men a lot. I do. Which I think is why it's perfect that I'm here, because I do try very hard to understand men, and it is true, ultimately I can't, and ultimately all of the women in your lives will not be able to, but it's actually quite helpful and should give you a little release in a way for you to realise that that is true. But women like to be helped along to understand what's going on in your head. Actually, did anyone watch Seinfeld? There was a very beautiful little bit once where, you know, women often do say to you, what are you thinking? What are you thinking? What are you thinking to men? And he said, usually we're just thinking nothing. We're walking along the street going, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And women don't know this. We think you're thinking a lot of things. So you need to explain that too. Actually, nothing. Nothing is going on. So, and that's fine. That's just a male way of being. And there's actually nothing wrong with it. Okay. Back to every woman being different. And I think because we were aware too of the danger of this being a kind of a bit of a marriage thing, I don't think it really is, and I, because my expertise is around sexuality, I will actually be using that as an example in a little while, but I think a lot of these principles are relevant to your mum, your sister, your daughter, your colleagues, as well as your wife. All right, so I'm really attempting to speak something that's common to all of us, and women are very different. And I thought, I think the really, really tricky thing about this can be for some men, because talking is not actually meant to be your strong point neurophysiologically, okay? And men do can find it very hard. Once again, I don't want to generalise, because some men are fantastic, you know, total gift of the gab. But a lot of men do find it a big, big struggle. And actually, it can be really very anxiety-provoking. I think you need to learn to, and when I was thinking about this, I thought, okay, a little male analogy, mind you, it's very across the sexes now, is it's like doing light weights but lots of repetitions. Okay, so don't think you have to lift a really heavy weight. What you need to do is, like, it's hand weights and lots of maximal repetitions, and in that way you will get stronger. So start to do just little bits of learning how to talk, but repeat it, and in that way you'll get stronger. Don't take on the big scary issues. Just start little and get better. Often Greg and I do talk about progress, not perfection, like going on a bit of a journey and making progress. So sort of low weight talking and getting better at it is the way, I think, to enter into it. And I will share with you something that I was really helped by when I started doing counselling, because as you can tell, I do like to chat, but it's actually very important in counselling to listen. So I still have to employ that. And one of the things that I found very useful was the idea of being curious. And I think this is fantastic, because we've realised we're talking about the fact that all women are different, so we can't assume that we know what they're thinking. So curiosity is very important. So for the keep it simple, stupid people, at this point in your handout, I would just simply, under the can we get inside a woman's head, just write curious so that you remember here. So that you just remember to ask the women in your lives, mothers, sisters, daughters, wives, whoever, ex-wives, girlfriends, be curious. Curious, curious, curious. Ask questions, ask questions, ask questions. And that will really help you. So I'd just put down curious and put a big ring around it, I think. And then we go on to the next point. Oh, hang on, I have to tell the joke that Greg told me not to tell. I said to him, I'm going to say it. when I was being told to be curious, my teacher said to me, so I'll just shift the blame here, be curious, don't assume. And you'll have all heard this one. I'm sure they've all heard this one before, because if you assume, it makes an ass out of you and me. If you look at the word assume, ass, you, me. Huh? Very clever. I need really silly little word things like that for me to remember. Be curious, Amelia, otherwise, you know, don't assume. Okay. On to the next bit, what women want. Well, I'm not really going to be able to tell you, am I? Because you're going to all have to be curious, curious, curious. But I think there is one very, and I do a lot of speaking to women's groups, and actually, to encourage you on that point too, I actually give them a bit of a serve and try to encourage them to not be so negative about men, because there is a lot of negativity floating around in society. And, you know, I'm quite fond of Bob Geldof, and I believe he's very big in, and Steve Bidoff and so on, in men actually being cared for as well in society. And I think that's really, really important. Yes, we should care for women, and it's ironic, isn't it? We actually still need to care for both sexes, and we don't. But there is a very unifying theme to what women want out of their relationships with men. Their fathers, their husbands, their boyfriends, their brothers. And that is the idea of being cherished, which is a very, very biblical idea. And when I thought about being cherished, because for women that will be in different ways for them. So once again, curiosity to find out how your woman, the women in your life will feel cherished. Is I was thinking we're very attracted to strength and gentleness. So actually the person that leapt into my head was someone like Bruce Willis, who I have to say is not the biggest spunk on the earth, okay, but he's very strong, gutsy, all of those kind of movies, but he'll also allow the kind of tender side to come through. I mean, the same would be true of Mel Gibson, Harrison Ford. That's what you see, and which we just, you know, women just melt about, that idea of that very strong man with the tender, righteous part of him. And I think that that is a very, very captivating view of manliness to women, and it's surrounding the idea of wanting to be cherished by a man like that. Don't feel too intimidated by these men. Like I say, they're not that gorgeous. They just do that strength and gentleness thing. Okay. There's a new book at the moment. I was going to mention this, which all my female friends keep telling me about. So obviously this is really hitting a nerve with women, which is about the fact that most of us have been in relationships where we've felt just totally abandoned. And there's a book called He's Just Not That Into You. of people seeing that around. Anyway, I haven't read it, but women everywhere are saying to me, isn't that just funny? It's just the perfect title. It's just, you know, we just have to realise that sometimes men just aren't that into us. But that's what we crave. We crave a relationship or relationships with our father and so on where they're actually showing that they're really interested in us. It's the curiosity thing, you know, they're into us. So that's, and we do, we often feel abandoned. The other thing I'd say is step up and be brave. When you're doing your little weights practice with learning how to speak to women, be brave when you break off a relationship and don't do the it's not you, it's me thing and blah, blah, blah. Sort of state it for what it is, even if it's a bit scary and a bit anxiety provoking for you and her. Because women feel worse, actually, if they're cast off without an explanation. And often, honesty is a very important thing in relationships. Often women will say to me when they come in with their husbands, it was worse that he never told me. Actually, once I knew, it was better. It was better. So, I mean, that does take a lot of bravery. So I know that's brave. And it is very brave because you know or you suspect, and you may indeed be right, that you're going to get a very anxious, upset response back. But I think that's where maybe the toughness comes in. You just have to sit there with that and just take it. And, you know, human beings are pretty resourceful and they're pretty adaptable, and women will adapt and change. But you're going to have to sit with that for a while. So I would encourage a bit of bravery on that front to spit out things that are even difficult to say. Okay. I was also going to have a little bit of a rave on to. There are some men, and actually Greg kind of hates these men, who are very good with words and very chatty, and they're very flattering, and they do tend to be the ones that women are drawn to. Turn that mobile phone off. How incredibly rude. Let's all stare at you. Oh, hello. I would have expected better of you. Okay. Okay. I can't remember what I was saying now. What was I saying? Oh, I know. Oily men, chatty men. Okay, so I often call them oily kind of men. And look, I love them. I love to be flattered. So you can all come talk to me afterwards and tell me I'm great and fabulous and it would be very nice for me. But actually, the men who do have a bit of that gift, I mean, it is very good and women will be attracted to you and so on and so, but be very careful with that gift. I don't think you should hate yourselves for having it, but be very, very careful with it and make sure you aren't using it for manipulative ends. And to those men who do look at the men who have the gift of the gab and kind of feel a bit inept, do not despair. Do not despair, because smooth words don't necessarily go the distance, and you've got big, big, big things to offer women. Dependability, being curious, being into them, being strong and tender. So don't be put off by those men. And the other take-home message. So really, in the What Women Want section, my take-home, keep it simple, stupid thing would be really the feeling of strength and gentleness. And the unifying most women is the idea of wanting to be cherished. And then the other very, 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 very important thing is that women loathe themselves almost without exception. And you may find that hard to believe, but actually it's demonstrated beautifully for us in Hollywood. So women just feel actually really, really awful about themselves. And even the women who make us feel bad about ourselves, so people like Claudia Schiffer and so on, you can tell that even they feel rotten about themselves. So that lovely young actress, I'm just trying to think what her name is, who was in Freaky Friday, and the one who was in Lizzie McGuire, sorry, my children are kind of up in that teenage world, they have both lost enormous amounts of weight just recently, and I believe Kate Hudson has lost enormous amounts of weight just recently, and you sort of think, but they're the ones that we're feeling bad about not being like, and even they are freaked out that they're not good enough. It is a really strong, solid thing here that you should bother to write down here as one of the few things that you write down here. Women almost universally feel loathsome. Actually, I was just thinking when you were talking about the whole rib idea, and Martin Luther, great reformer, used to call his wife his rib, which I think is pretty cute. And I was thinking, a rib is very skinny. I don't reckon there are many women out there who wouldn't mind being called a rib. Your mum, she wouldn't mind being called a rib. Hey, rib. So, it's quite cute. It just struck me before. Okay, so women actually do loathe ourselves, and interestingly enough, it does often come around our bodies. I think because you guys, in general, are a bit interested in the bodies, we kind of know that, and we're wanting to please you, and it all starts to get muddled up and mixed up, very much surrounding our bodies, and we generally loathe ourselves. It's really true. Okay. Now, the thing is, the other thing that you will have all noticed if you have more than a passing sort of acquaintance with any women is that you can't reason women out of that. Yes, 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 yes. You can't. Actually, you're gorgeous, darling, and all your friends say you're gorgeous and, you know, so on and so forth. You can't reason a woman out of that. Don't even try. Actually, I would say here, don't even try. Actually, this is not where you need to practice your speaking. You can't reason her out of it. Don't worry about it. Take a load off. Encourage her to really concentrate on her relationship with God here because he thinks she's wonderful. And he's really 100% reliable. So it's actually, I would shift her focus there if you can. And I wrote down here, you know, the old saying, you know, firm but fair. She was firm but fair, or he was firm but fair. Be firm but fair with your wife on this one. Be nice. Once again, the kind of strength with gentleness. Be gentle. Don't try to persuade her. She's going to have to make her own journey there. But be a bit firm and say, well, actually, I think you should have a little bit of a think about that. Why are you so sucked in? I'll talk a little bit more about this because this is a big, big, big one to women. Okay. So next thing is brain sex. This is a really interesting thing now. It used to be, I think Christians probably in the 60s and 70s had more of a struggle around this area than we do now with the research that we have neurobiologically and so on and physiologically, because it really has been established that men and women in general, to generalise, have different strengths and weaknesses in our brains. But in the 60s and 70s, of course, there was the idea of total equality, and to suggest anything else was just, you know, anathema. But now, interestingly enough, the rest of the world has actually caught up with Christians and goes, oh, yeah, actually men and women are different and that's okay. So we don't have much argument with the world now about that one. And I'm not going to go into it much, but there are lots of good books. And right at the end of our talk, we're actually going to flash up a bit of a book list, which you can write down. I was going to say here, like if you did want to pay Greg and I for about 6 months, we would write a Christian book on this if you wanted us to. But there are very good non-Christian books out there. But some people, you know, go, oh, but I don't want to read anything but a Christian book. So, you know, 6 months worth of pay and we'll write one. But okay, and actually, interestingly enough, there's one called Brain Sex, and we'll flash it up at the end, like the specifics of it, and you'll find it everywhere. In fact, I'd go and borrow it from the library. I wouldn't bother to shell out money for it. It's good, but, you know, have a little flick through. There's a little test in it called the Brain Sex Test, and it's 10 questions, which pretty reliably demonstrate where you fall within the male spectrum, brain-wise, and the female spectrum brain-wise. And I think it is kind of understandable that Greg and I have ended up doing this kind of talk because in the male spectrum, Greg's in the male spectrum, but he's down the female end of it. And I'm in the female spectrum, but I'm up the male end of it. So we come slightly closer towards one another. So fascinating little book. And actually, that test is used all over the place. Like, it's not, you know, a silly, vacuous kind of Clio test. And that's in the book Brain Sex. Okay, so that's been very established now, you know, outside of Christianity. They've all caught up with Christians on that one. Now, I've got this thing down here called enhancers and inhibitors. And this is generally what I speak about to do with sex. And this is where I was going to say, well, I could use an example of where men and women are different, just to give you an example. And because this is my area mainly of expertise, I'm going to use a sexual one. So at this point, it's true. If you're not in a sexual relationship with someone or have never been, it's going to be, you know, a little bit foreign. men and women are very different on this one. I think this is where I have my first slide. Okay, and a lot of you would be familiar with me talking about this. I don't know whoever came up with this little saying first. But write this one down. Write down. Bossy woman. Write it down. Because take this one home to your wife and see if it resonates. Men have sex to feel good about themselves, but women have to feel good about themselves to have sex. And this is a huge reason why people trot in and see me. Because they don't grasp this one, and they feel like the other person in the partnership, both the men and the women feel like the other person in the partnership is obviously out on some vendetta to get them or and what have you, but it's just because we're different. And this comes from some secular source, but very helpful. One of the things is when I do use this in the talks that Greg and I do together, I often feel, because people are more comfortable with the idea that we have to look after women, and if women feel great about themselves, and that is important that you understand that, I often feel like maybe the men feel like I'm being, that this makes them sound bad or something, because it seems a little self-centered, especially to Christian men, who actually have to say, by and large, I find extremely almost more, you're usually almost more idealistic in your desire to be other person-centered than women are, which is interesting. So I don't think that you're guilty of being egotistical most of the time. Okay, but I think that it's just really profound things. So the idea, what I often use when I say people is the idea of you, and I've really struggled to understand this, and your wives won't understand this at all either. Let's see if it makes sense to you. You've had a hard day at work or wherever you are. You're tired, busy. Actually, maybe someone's been a bit narky to you, or maybe someone's put you down a little bit publicly, or you just feel a bit thrown off, whatever it is. You know, maybe just a little bit of a kind of day. You come home. If you had sex with your wife at that point, it'd be really good. Like, you'd feel better. You'd feel more centered. You'd just feel more put together. Just, you know, it would just really reorient you and just, you know, it'd be a really nice way to feel better about yourself. Whereas women, if they've had that kind of day where they felt a bit put down, a bit, there is no way that they're going to go home, ask, you know, wives, if you have wives, there is no way in that kind of situation that be interested at all. It's just a difference between us. Just a difference. It's the way that our brains are wired. And it's just good to know. It's good for your wife to know that that is not a horrible thing, that you're like that. It's not. It's just because you're men. It doesn't matter. You're just like that. And, you know, it's not that they're married to some sort of weird creep or something, which a lot of women can start to think those things and not realise. So I actually think a very strong, important part of being a male is to learn how to talk so that you can talk to the women in your life, including your mother, sister, everyone, wife, about ways in which you're just different and just say, you know, get some ammunition behind you. Get some of the kind of, actually men and women are different behind. In this way, we are just different. It's not a vendetta against you. I'm just different to you in this way. Sorry, I realise I'm talking more to them than to you. I'm going to turn this way for the rest of what I'm saying. Okay. One of my other things that I was going to say there is one of the things that they have realised in research is that women have more developed sensory sort of input. So sound, smell, all of those things are higher for us. And I mean, this is a very multifactorial thing. But when we think about having sex, women often want the light off and men would like it on. And it is true, too, that just sexually in our responsiveness, the men really do like the visual and women don't. Like, normally women actually like their eyes closed, too, so they can really concentrate on what's going on, whereas men like their eyes open. You know, these are just, they're just differences. They're not horrible things. They're just differences. And women also feel awful usually about their bodies, so that can also have factors to do with the lights being on. So candles are very good. I know they're very stereotypical, but they're good for that, so that you can both kind of be winners. But women will often close their eyes so that they actually can concentrate more, which is different. We're just different in that way. And it really shows up very, very strongly in that area. The other thing is, when I normally talk about this, one of the things that's tricky for women and men is the things that make us, like women, make women actually feel more like being sexually involved are things that everyone feels comfortable with. The idea of a bit of romance, like, you know, flowers, dinner, blah, 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 all of those very easy things. Whereas the male things for wanting to have sex, and a lot of women say to me, but why would you bother anyway? Because he just wants to have sex anyway, just all the time, full stop. But I think we should care. I think you guys deserve a little bit of love and attention, a little bit of a treat, why not? Is that your things are more challenging to society at large and women in particular. So the fact that you are so visual and you're not as picky as we often think that you are, but you are more visual. And I think these are pre-fall things. I don't think there's anything, you know, I don't think there's any, often women will almost paint them as being, you know, sinful or post-fall desires, the idea for a little bit of variety, a little bit of fun, a little bit of, you know, whatever it is. And once again, you're all different. They're often painted as being a little, you know, politically incorrect, a little sinful maybe for Christians. And they're not. I think they're just pre-fall things. So, but you stand buckleys of getting them met, probably, unless you start to learn how to talk about them. Okay. Now, yes, sorry, time. I could talk forever. Areas of sinfulness. Have to talk about this one, though. So quite obviously, an area of sinfulness is, and I wonder if I've got another slide here. No. Quite obviously, men, you hear about it over and over and over and over and over in the press. There's always a sex scandal, da 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 da. My mother comes from England and she said, you know, the papers over there always loved a Mookie Vicar story, you know. So there'd always be a story about a fall from grace for a man. And I've been thinking, because quite obviously you do everything else as well, which is, you know, steal pens from work or, you know, we're always trying to usurp the right relationship between us and God. So, but what do women do? Because I know, we must be just as sinful as you. I don't think you've got, you know, you out-trump us on sinfulness. So I've been thinking about this for years and years, actually. And I remember talking to Philip Jensen about it originally and, you know, Greg, and they went, maybe it's gossip, I don't know. And, you know, gossip, I think it's around it. But I think I've got it. I think this might be it. And it's really subtle and really insidious and really, really, really super destructive. But don't all race home and wallop your wife with this one. But the thing that we do, because you can't, force someone to give this up, okay? The Holy Spirit and God have got to instruct women to give this one up, and you can encourage that. And that is, we're really competitive and we compare ourselves, a la all these Hollywood stars who are losing weight, comparing. Women are sucked into competition, and it can do really evil things to relationship, because we go husband, tick, house, tick, school, tick, number of kids, tick. You know, how am I, where am I in the pecking order at church? We do it at church. It's just not as visible as the sinful falling, but really, really, really destructive, which I'm sure would resonate with a lot of you here. Okay, so that's all I wanted to say there. Okay. Then I was going to say, okay, checklist for improving relationships. Believe me, I wasn't actually going to give you much here, because it does differ depending on your wife. However, there are a few good books. This is a really, my next one is, yeah, this is a bit of a really simple pop psychology Christian self-help book, which has probably got dodgy theology. I haven't actually, I don't think Greg or anyone else that I know of has analysed it. I think it's really helpful. Really, really, really jolly helpful. And I actually use it a lot in therapy. Greg always goes, oh, they're all good. They're all good. And they are. But men and women, we tend to speak, for example, my love languages, like the ones I really care about, they're all good. But the ones I really like are physical touch, and which is not sex, by the way. Physical touch cannot be sex, otherwise men always tick that one. So mine's physical touch and words of affirmation. Greg, however, his love language is acts of service. So he is always doing stuff for me, which is really, really, really nice. Okay, that's nice. But I want him to. I actually want him to tell me more how fabulous I am. And I need to do the acts of service thing. Anyway, it's very interesting. So they're all good, but there are ones that we prefer, and they tend to be the one that we speak. So we're madly speaking our love language, but our spouse might be saying, like, going, "Oh, well, that's all very nice and everything, but it's not hers." So check out, and you can do it for everyone. We've looked at our kids, and actually their love languages are pretty clear too. Okay, so I think that's really handy. Actually, I was watching McLeod's Daughters, and on whenever it was, Wednesday night, Greg was doing a talk somewhere, and just at the end of it, and I don't know the characters because I don't watch it, but one of the guys started spouting a bit of kind of pop psychology, something really nice, sounded really nice, blah, blah, blah. And one of the girls in it said, "Been reading your self-help books again." And he went, who watched it here? And he said, "No, got it off the Footy Show." And I thought, that's brilliant. Actually, I like the Footy Show. And I think they often do spout a bit of good advice now. But anyway, I was going to say, you can read. And I know men are always typified as being non-readers. And I tried to get Greg to make sure our book was very, very small and easy to read. And we're going to give you a list of books. So then the next thing we're going to do is show you a bit of Greg's artwork. Men, very simple creatures, which is a nice thing. You know, we shouldn't, you know, put you down at that point like, oh, you're so simple. And then, and Greg drew this. He's very proud of this. And okay. And now I'm going to hand over to my husband.
Thanks. I'll just... As you can see, there's a lot of material we'd like to cover in a short space there. But the final comment to make is I began giving you a biblical picture of what we think is going on with men and women. Amelia's added sort of practical advice on what's going on inside the woman herself in a very chatty format. I'm learning to keep up with that chatting. The last point to say is we have a great example of a man who has achieved this. He wasn't married, Da Vinci Code aside. He wasn't married, but he understood women really well. Jesus. He loved them. He fought for them. He died for them, just like us. And it is amazing how much we can learn as men from our Saviour in the way he treated other people, particularly women. So we'll leave it there. Thanks very much for listening. We'll hang around a bit afterwards if people want to ask questions. I know there's another session, but sorry for going a bit over time.